And
I can go on about it.
Terrific, because I know people would be very interested because she was incredibly close to Judy Garland, and they were going to write a book together, mm-hmm. correct?
According to Dot, yes, they had talked about it, and didn't happen, unfortunately, but it had been talked about.
Okay, so how did those two meet? How did they hook up, become friends?
Dot had actually, and another few facts I've uncovered in my searching over the years, Dot had been brought to MGM by Vincent Minnelli, specifically to work with Judy. He knew that Judy was trying to transition from the ingenue, young adult, teenager type roles when she got the part of Esther Smith in Meet Me in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Meet Me in St. Louis, excuse me, Tootie. Meet Me in St. Louis. And so he had known about Dot. He heard about her, and he brought her over. Dot had already left Paramount by then because all her, as she put it, all her stars were leaving by 1940 or so. So Dot was working at different places. And Gilleroth, Sidney Gilleroth, who's the head of the hairdressing department, mm-hmm. Brought Judy into Dot. And, you know, this is Dottie. Dottie, this is Judy, blah, blah, blah. And Judy hands Dot a little envelope full of all her paraphernalia, the discs for the nose.
Wow.
And her teeth caps and blah, blah, blah. And Dot takes one look at this stuff. And she goes, "You're a pretty girl. You don't need this stuff." And she tossed it out. And Judy loved it.
Yeah, but why did they, like, great. A nose thing? What was that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was it to widen her nose or something?
They put discs inside that give her nose a slightly different shape, and they whatever.
She had adorable nose. I loved her nose.
She did. And Dot, you know, Dot did a few things with Judy that she thought needed to be done, but she basically didn't use anything fake on her. And that kind of helped out right then and there. And then they just developed, you know, there was about a 22 year age gap between them. You know, Dot was old enough to be Judy's mother, and that's quickly the role she took on with Judy. She became her surrogate mother kind of figure. And they just hit it off really well. Judy discovered that she had a kindred spirit in Dot. And I'm sure you read the Fanny Bryce story.
Yes.
They were working on, what movie was it? Ziegfeld Follies of 1946, only they were making it actually in 44, the end of 44, or the beginning of 44. They'd started shooting different sequences at that. And, of course, it was during the war, and one day Fanny Bryce didn't show up. And they were all wondering where the hell she is. And Judy said, "Come on, Dot, let's go look for her." And Dot's going, "I can't do that. I can't leave the set. I'm not supposed to leave." And Judy goes, "We're going." And Dot, as Dot said, when Judy said, "You're doing something, you did it." It was like, you know, that was that. You didn't tell her no. Because if she didn't want to hear no, she wouldn't hear no.
Right.
You know. So they took off. They went into Beverly Hills to Fanny Bryce's house. And they walked in, and in the middle of the kitchen, there was a butcher that Fanny had brought in from someplace in downtown. And Dot said there was like a whole cow hanging, dead, of course, the carcass of a cow was hanging from the ceiling in the kitchen. And this butcher was butchering, you know, cutting up different cuts of meat. Fanny had bought a freezer or two, and Fanny was determined that her two children were going to have meat throughout the war, you know.
Yeah, because there was rationing. Yeah, they didn't know that.
And Fanny was going to make her kids were going to have food, and they walk in, and Dot said Judy started to crack up. I mean, here's this dead cow.
Poor cow. Kitchen.
And Dot looked over at Judy, and she started to crack up, and she said it was at that point that she realized she had a partner in crime kind of thing here, you know, not crime, but you know,
yeah, it was like a soulmate, a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. They were both laughing and cracking up, and there's Fanny with the dead cow. Hello.
It's like an I Love Lucy episode that Lucy did when she got the whole cow and the freezer.
Oh, only, that's only Fanny Bryce.
Yeah, that's a riot.
And you can't blame her, you know. Yeah, I mean, I never experienced rationing, but you can't blame her. And apparently, I found this out from Frances D. It didn't matter how big a star you were rationed. I remember talking to Frances D. When I was visiting her at her ranch about 5-6 years before she died. And we were talking about the long drive she had from Thousand Oaks, because of course there was no freeway back then. It was all highway.
Yeah.
And to get from Thousand Oaks to Hollywood, it was a good hour and a half, 2 hour drive. You know, now you can do it in 25 minutes, but, and she would tell me how sometimes she would have to stay overnight in town when she was shooting a movie. And she talked about how much it cost for the gas. It was hard to get gas. And I said, really? I would think you would, you know, you're making a movie. They would excuse you for having, you know, they would give you gas cards for that. And she was, oh, no. We were all rationed.
You know, that's fair. I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, everybody. Yeah, well, yeah.
You know what it is? It's fair is fair, you know?
I know. Oh, no, she said, oh, no, we had rations. We couldn't just, you know, it didn't matter who you were in Hollywood. You know, you were rationed with the food and the sugar and the whatever else.
There
the,
was
the
eggs.
Rubber for the tires and everything.
Yeah. And eggs, silk eggs, stockings, right. Stockings, yeah. Things like that.
Yes, they had to paint the back of their legs.
Like they do. I mean, they have like tan in a can now. Oh, like yeah. Put that stripe up the back of their legs.
They put the stripe seam up the back because, you know, back then the silk stockings have the seam in the back.
Yes.
So they painted the back of their legs to
that's
look
so
like they
funny.
Had stockings up. Yeah. Yeah.
So Judy and your aunt were partners. And did she, once she met Judy, was she doing any other makeup or was she just like Judy's personal person?
Well, she quickly became Judy's. She was literally, now this is the interesting part, and I found this out from certain other people who worked at MGM at the time who were not overly friendly to Dot because of certain jealousy issues. But Dot was not under contract to MGM. And a lot of people there resented that. And I have copies of it. Dot was under personal contract to Judy. She did not have a contract with MGM.
So she just...
She worked with Judy exclusively. Well, and not she did make up other people. If they needed it, Dot helped them, that kind of thing. But basically, she was to work with Judy on whatever movie she worked. It was an MGM contract, but it was in Judy's MGM contract that she has the exclusive services of Dottie Ponadel, Dorothy Ponadel.
And she was go ahead.
No, that was, you know, I mean, everyone knew about it, but some of the people I talked to 10, 12 years ago were not happy about that. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yes. And also, so Dottie was like, they liked her because they thought she was a steadying influence on Judy. And it's funny how Judy's mother went to... was it Louis B. Mayer?
Louis B. Mayer.
And trying to get Dot fired because she said she was a bad influence on Judy.
Well, Ethel was basically jealous. Judy had a very close relationship, as I said, basically mother-daughter. And you could see that. I remember witnessing that when I was a child, you know, when Judy would come over. But Ethel wanted Dot fired, and Louis B. Mayer said nothing doing. You know, and there were times when Ethel wasn't allowed on the set. You know, get her out of here. You know, she would drive people crazy. But no, that was not going to happen. But Dot did work with other people. I remember talking to, as I said before, Angela Lansbury, Catherine Grayson. I remember one day I had met, oh my God, and her name just went out of my head. Andy Hardy. The other girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of her name. Yes. She was in Gone with the Wind as well.
Yes. Gone with the Wind.
I can't think of her name. I'm blanking.
Isn't that awful? I'm blanking, too. And she was such a wonderful person. And I met her. I'd look it up on my phone, but I'm talking on my phone.
I know. I can't look it up either.
And my laptop's in the other room. And it's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, I met her at an event. She was speaking at a women's group out here in Hollywood. years and years ago, obviously. And I went to meet her. And this is what was interesting. I made a discovery about certain people in Dot. I asked her if she, I showed her a picture of Dot, as an older Dot, but with Judy. This was in the early 50s already. Do you recognize this lady? Where, you know, obviously it's Judy, but you recognize this? Oh, no. She took a quick look. She was busy. She didn't. I said, oh, well, thank you very much, blah, 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 you know. And that was that. But I stayed to listen to the talk, and I thanked her again after it was over. And her name is right in front of me. I can't come up with it.
I'm looking. I'm trying to get it to click. I have Love Finds Andy Hardy, and I'm trying to get this to come
there
down.
It'll be there.
It's taking a long time to just come on, you guys. Show me.
Well, look up Gone with the Wind, the three sisters in Gone with
yes,
the Wind.
Yes, okay.
Evelyn Keyes, Scarlett O'Hara, of course.
I know this woman's name. Was she a Margaret? Was she a...
No.
Gone with the Wind.
No.
Okay. Gone.
I can see her right now. But
I
anyway,
can too. She played Polly. She played Polly in the Andy Hardy things, I think.
Yes, Polly. Polly Benedict.
Okay, I'm on it. Yay, we're going to get her name.
And everyone is sitting there listening to this, and they're going to think, God, these two broads are idiots. They can't even think for it.
Rutherford. We got her.
Ann Rutherford. Boop, boop, boop,
boop.
Thank you.
Yay.
God, I never remember her name. Ann Rutherford. She was wonderful. Anyway, so I stayed for her talk. I thanked her afterwards. I got in line, the receiving line. I thanked her very much, you know. She said, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know. And I said, it's too bad you didn't recognize my Aunt Dottie, but blah, blah, blah. She let out a yell right then and there. She said, Dottie? You know, I hadn't mentioned her name. I had shown her a photograph.
Yeah.
She knew Dottie right away. It didn't click. We talked and talked. She loved Dottie. She was the first one who told me that Dottie, alone of all the makeup artists there, had her own makeup area at MGM. She told me everybody else had to go to, I think she called it the bullpen.
Yeah.
It was a big area where they got made up. Dottie had her own spot.
Wow.
You came to Dottie. Dottie didn't go to you.
Miss Big Thang.
I said, oh, you know, did you like her makeup? Did you blah, blah, blah? And she looked at me. She said, very sadly, she said, I wasn't on that level. She didn't make me up. I was going, oh, God, I'm sorry. But Dot did do other people, obviously. She did what she wanted to do. But, you know, if she had to do Judy, of course, she had to stick with Judy. I remember I was at a showing of something at the Academy years and years ago. And this is way before the book came out. I was still doing research. I'd taken along some photographs of Dot and Judy, Dot and a few other people, and I was showing them around to, you know, because when you're sitting at the Academy, you're basically with other movie people.
Right.
So I would strike up a conversation. Hi, do you recognize this woman? Blah, blah, blah. And one of my photographs was being passed around like two and three rows ahead of me, you know, because people were looking at them.
Pass
All
them
of
down.
A sudden, about two rows ahead of me, I heard a yell. Dottie! And it was a woman who had been in several of the MGM musicals as a background singer, in the chorus. And she was wonderful. Her name was Sue Casey. And I don't know if she's still with us, but she told me the wonderful story of, I forgot which picture it was that they were working on, but how Dot would stay behind after the principal shooting was over with, you know, and Judy had left and everything. She stayed behind to help the extras with their makeup.
How nice.
And Sue said they were so grateful that they had this A-list makeup artist who didn't have to stay. She could have gone home, but she wanted to do them a favor because, you know, she knew what an important deal it was for them, and she wanted to help. So she stayed behind to work on the extras.
What a nice... That was really wonderful of her to do.
Yeah. And Sue told me how wonderful that was and how they were all so appreciative, you know. And I remember meeting Catherine Grayson at an autograph show one time. She told me how a couple of times when her regular makeup artist wasn't available, she would, you know, Dot would be sent in to work on her, and she was, you know, I said, oh, did you approve? And she said, oh, yeah, she was great, you know, that kind of thing. So
she did.
She obviously did work on other people. It was just that, you know, if she was busy with Judy, she had to stick with Judy. If there was Judy was shooting scenes or whatever, she had to stay there. But Dot did what she wanted to do, you know.
Also, this was during her marriage to Vincent Minnelli. And an interesting story about the clock with Robert Walker, who was a tragic, he was a tragic soul.
Yeah, poor Robert. He had, well, first of all, his marriage was breaking up. And Dot remembers Jennifer visiting the set with the two little boys every now and then, and she said that she even said in the book those are the two most gorgeous children she had ever seen, and it was very obvious that Bob Walker adored his sons, but he was having issues, and he used alcohol to escape from those issues, and there would be days when he was missing from the set, and Judy and Dot would go, you know, they felt terrible for him, and Judy felt very badly for him because she knew what he was going through. And they would go find him. And there were a couple of occasions they would bring him back to Dot's house to dry out. And Dot would write about how he was hanging out in the garage, which he had outfitted. He had things in the garage. He had a swing, not the kind of swing that we think of, but, you know, those old 1930s, 1940s.
Workout kind of things?
They were like sofas on a swing back and forth, those things. And she had chairs and tables and things. And they would bring him in and dry him out and get him, you know, and he would open up and talk to them about things, you know, once he felt better. But she said Judy was a wonderful nursemaid, you know, because number one, the movie was very important to Judy. It was her first dramatic role. She really wanted it to do well. Yeah. And so she was very adamant about getting him in good shape so he could finish the movie. But Dot said it was just amazing what a great caretaker Judy was.
Yeah, of Robert.
They both were, but, you know, yeah.
He did, you know, it was a beautiful film, and you'd never know. I mean, he did a great job. They both did.
And he was amazing.
He was a great actor. And
he was a great actor.
Judy was wonderful in the film.
She was. She was. It was, you know, it was directed by Minnelli, and she really, really wanted to show people, hey, I can do a lot more than just sing and dance and be cute. You know, I can do this. And she did. She was amazing.
She was great. So she also she protected Judy in a lot of ways. She went on trips with Judy. And
she went cross country with her. She went to London with her. Her whole European tour, the first one in 1951. Yes.
And she also would have dinner with Liza and Vincent when Judy was sneaking out with Sid Luft.
Yeah, kind of. You know, Dot had known, well, obviously Liza since birth. And Vincent wanted some kind of continuation there, you know, and Dot would kind of step up to be the, not necessarily the mother figure, but to, you know, to be another figure in the house when Judy wasn't around. And Dot would take Liza a couple places as a very young girl, you know, take her to movies, take her to little play outings kind of thing. Not all the time, but every now and then Dot would step in to help out. And Dot said that, you know, at one point, Liza was just as bullheaded as her mother. Dot was trying to get Liza to leave, and Liza didn't want to leave. You know, Dot's going, come on, we got to go home now. Your father's waiting. I don't want to go. And Dot's going, you're just as stubborn as your mother. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, Liza would be 4 years old.
She had her mama in her, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, she did. But that was okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Thank God she did. You know, good for her.
Yeah.
But, no, Dot would hang out and help out and that kind of thing. I mean, they had a housekeeper and someone for Liza, obviously. But I just think it was the connection, you know. And, of course, when Judy finally left Vincent, you know, that stopped. But in the meantime, it was, you know, Dot would stick around to help out.
And
she liked Vincent. She greatly admired Vincent.
Yeah, he was a wonderful director. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. And he was just a nice guy. And Dot felt badly for him that this was going on. I mean, Vincent knew about it. It wasn't anything he didn't know about. Dot just felt bad about the whole situation.
She did not like Sid Luft, did she?
He was not one of her favorite people.
Right.
You know, and she didn't think what Judy was doing was right, of course. That's Dot's Midwestern upbringing, you know.
Right.
You didn't do this kind of thing, but, you know, when Judy wanted to do something, Judy did something. That was that, you know.
Judy,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people did. But,
yes.
You know, Dot, being the mother figure, was trying to tell her, you can't do this. Judy was saying, watch me.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that story.
Judy had
Dot supported her no matter what
she did. Yeah, of course. It's like a mother.
Right there,
unconditional love.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
She also, Judy had like a really big yen. She was madly in love with Frank Sinatra.
Yes, she liked him a whole lot. Let's say that. She really, really, really liked Frank. And I always thought it was too bad they didn't get together, because imagine the kids they could have had.
Wow. I mean,
wow.
Boom.
Who knows? The genes may not have lined up that way.
Sometimes it doesn't. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
But I read in your book, you said that Frank was afraid of Judy because she was so all-encompassing when she fell in love.
Yeah. She was like overpowering.
Yes.
And Frank, you know, he knew to stay away.
She was needy. She was a needy person.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, a lot of them were.
Yes.
You know, Judy, not necessarily any more so than many other people.
I agree.
It was just more publicized. That's all. And it was things were, as they are with a lot of Hollywood people still today, they're blown out of proportion.
Right.
You know, you see some movie star walking down the street and all of a sudden some columnist will have them running away from somebody or running to somebody or wreaking havoc when all they were doing was walking down the street.
Yes,
you know,
it was just
leave
a simple,
for Pete's sake. So
so
poor Judy couldn't catch a break with a lot of these people.
You know,
they had to make her into something she was not.
During the Sid Luft phase, Judy basically she was not doing films and she gained a lot of weight. And she had Lorna and Joey.
The weight gain, she did. But a lot of the weight gain was due to her being ill in the mid and late 1950s. She didn't, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't that she was eating.
Food,
yeah.
You know, some of it was she gained a little weight because of eating, but then she became ill with a liver problem.
Ew.
And, of course, that bloats you up, you know. And until she got over that, and then, of course, starting in the late 50s, early 60s, she looked amazing. But she had to get over the illness first.
Right. I didn't know she had that illness. And, you know, I didn't think she was like some humongous eater. She just didn't seem to be. She seemed like a little lady. So.
Well, she enjoyed her food. You know, she enjoyed her food.
Who doesn't?
But, like a lot of people.
Yummy.
But, you know, so she, you know, when you're on camera all the time, you have to be a certain weight, especially then, because the camera does add weight.
It really does.
And, you know, and you don't want to weigh, you know, and they were careful with her to a degree. Dot does totally refute the idea about that they were watching over her that closely, because Dot used to order the lunches and Judy would eat. But again, you have to watch your weight to a degree. I think it was somewhat freeing when Judy was not making the movies, you know, after she left MGM, because she could be a little freer in you know, have an extra helping of potato salad
or something,
you know, whatever, you know.
I read how she used to bring pastrami sandwiches to your aunts in the middle of the night. She'd always stop at the deli.
Dot would have, Judy loved deviled eggs, and Dot would make, you know, the inside of the deviled egg.
Yeah.
That, you know, the yolk and the whatever.
Paprika.
All
that stuff.
Dot would make just the inside of the egg. I don't know what she did with the white, but she would make the inside, and she would keep it in the old Pyrex glass containers.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Judy came over, she liked to make a sandwich out of it. Well, I thought this was the most disgusting thing on the face of the earth. You know, I'm like 6, 7 years old,
you're
and
like,
I'm looking at this yellow stuff, and it was like ew, I don't want to eat that, you know. And I couldn't believe how these people could eat this crap, but they did.
And you never tried it?
That was, no. Now I love deviled eggs. And this was a fairly recent thing. I didn't start loving deviled eggs until maybe, in the last 10 years.
It came to you.
So, you know, for 45, 50 years, I wouldn't eat the stuff because it looked awful. And I tried one day. I was at a gathering, and I thought, this stuff is good. How come I haven't been eating these?
They can be yummy. Depends on who makes it and how they make it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Dot made it fine. I just didn't like the way it looked.
Yeah, it doesn't look pretty. Yeah, especially if it's not in the egg, in the white part.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that and Velveeta cheese. Judy likes Velveeta cheese.
Yeah, and grilled cheese sandwich.
Another thing I couldn't stand.
I love it.
Judy, I remember, sent over a thing of her shepherd's pie one day or something that she had made that had, I don't know, I saw it in the pot. It was cooking on the stove. It looked like it had vegetables in it, and I didn't want to go anywhere near it.
Of course.
And Dot's going, but Judy sent it over. Don't you want to try? You don't want to hurt Judy's feelings, do you? And I'm going, I don't want to eat that stuff. It's got vegetables in it. You know, God forbid I should eat a vegetable.
Wow.
I'm 7 years, 8 years old. So, no, sorry, Judy.
So you didn't taste
your cooking. No, Dot loved it. Whatever it was, you know, people would bring things over, and Judy brought this, and Dot said, you're going to hurt her feelings. I don't care. I'm not eating it.
Well, she could have just said, you tasted it or something.
Yeah. I don't know what she said. No, I think she ended up telling Judy I wouldn't eat it, but that's, you know, Dot was honest.
What a nice
thing. But that's okay. Not a problem. I went and ate a box of Oreos instead.
Yum. They didn't have double stuff at that time. Just the plain old Oreos.
They didn't have chocolate. They didn't have mint. They had plain old Oreos.
I like plain old Oreos.
Yeah.
I do like double stuffs. But the other ones, it's like, they're not Oreos. What are you talking about? Get them out of here. Like strawberry Oreos. These are not Oreos.
Oh, God forbid.
Yes.
Halloween Oreos.
Oh.
Yellow. Well, no, thank you.
Orange. Yeah. No, no. This should be against the law. It's an outrage. Anyway, so Judy was out of the movies for how long?
She left MGM, 1950, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
She made Star is Born in 54.
That was her comeback, wasn't it?
Not that long. Well, she hadn't really been gone. I mean, people call it a comeback, but, you know, like Judy used to say, she didn't go anywhere. She was still there. And, of course, she had done these amazing concerts in the meantime.
Yes.
You know, record-breaking concerts. You know, the reviews she got were just absolutely tremendous. She went back to her roots, her vaudeville roots. She got up on the stage with a microphone, and it was just Judy.
She was a hell of a performer. You know, she also was mesmerizing on stage. You just couldn't take your eyes off
her. She was.
What a voice. Yikes.
She didn't need all the crap that they use today with the lights and the fog coming up from the stage.
Right. Or lip syncing. Lip syncing.
She had, no.
A lot of people can't sing.
Judy Garland had talent. That's all you needed on the stage. Judy, an orchestra or a piano sometimes, a microphone. That was it. And she would hold people spellbound for 2 hours.
How did she keep those pipes? I don't know how she did it, because she was singing so long, and she had the most amazing voice. And, you know, she would give me chills. Like, the song that really gives me chills that she sang is The Man That Got Away. I get chills when I hear that, because that's so beautiful. So Judy was married to Sid Luft how long?
There's a quick, funny story about The Man That Got Away. When I was, I don't know if you have time for
sure.
this, but, you know, when you're a little kid in school, and at some point, first, second grade, they ask you to, what can you do? You know, sing a song, play the piano. Well, I could do both. So, because I had piano lessons. So I remember playing the piano one day and doing a fairly complicated little piece, and everybody loved it. And then we were supposed to sing a song. So, you know, the other kids sang whatever they sang, whatever little ditty they were singing. And I got up and I decided to sing The Man That Got Away because I knew it. I knew all of Judy's songs because we had the records.
Yeah.
And Judy would, you know, I would play the records and Judy would come over and help me with, you know, that's a whole other story. But anyway, so I sang The Man That Got Away. And I remember my first grade teacher kind of looking at me with a strange look on her face. I mean, here's this six-year-old singing The Man That Got Away, you know. And I was finished. The kids all loved it, you know. Thank you very much. Where did you learn that song? Oh, Judy taught it to me. Okay. And that was the end of that. So later on, Dot got a phone call from my first grade teacher questioning my choice of song. You know, she did a good job, but I'm just wondering, why did she sing The Man That Got Away? You know, it wasn't quite an appropriate song for a little kid.
No, not for a six-year-old.
And Dot was never cowed by any of this. She said, because Judy Garland taught it to her. Okay. So that was like, I was always getting in trouble for something, but that was, you know, my poor teacher was like, okay, fine.
I would have loved to see that. I would have laughed. I would have loved it. No, yeah. I just would have loved to hear you sing it as a six-year-old child.
Oh, yeah.
That had to be hysterical.
And, you know, I thought it was a perfectly reasonable song to sing.
It's
you know,
a beautiful song.
It's a nice song. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with a six-year-old singing a torch song? You know, Rosemarie did it.
Yes, there's nothing wrong.
Well, Rosemarie could do it. I could do it. In fact, I think Dot even talked about Rosemarie at that point. She would tell me about Rosemarie's career, you know, when she was a kid. But anyway,
she was in vaudeville all the way. So how long was she married to Sid?
Judy, 13 years.
Wow.
I believe, 12 or 13 years.
Yikes.
You know, they weren't all together for those years, but she was married legally.
And then she,
those years, I believe,
married a couple of real clunkers. Was Dot around?
I don't know if they were clunky. I don't know. I wouldn't call them clunky. Well,
did Dot like her? Oh, the last
definitely.
One, yeah. Okay, so tell us how this all happened. You ended up moving to California.
No, I was born here.
But you went in to move in with Dot.
Right. Well, my mother had died. My grandmother was selling the house that we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I forgot, well, she was kind of talked into selling the house, or her husband had died.
Oh.
So within the space of literally a year to the day, my grandmother lost her husband, who was her second husband. My grandpa Charlie, he died, and then literally a year to the day, my mother died.
Wow.
And grandma did not want to stay in that house any longer, and I don't blame her.
I don't blame her at all.
And so she moved to the Park La Brea apartments. And Dot said to Daddy, bring your kids, me and my brother, come on over with me. And because Daddy needed like a new start, you know, so we moved in with Dot, and that's where we stayed for the next 15 years.
And that's how you
got
to...
Well, my brother didn't. My brother got married a few years later. He was a lot older than I am, so he got married a couple years later, and he was gone. So I was basically it.
And in that period, you ended up you met and you got to know Judy very well.
Mm-hmm.
And you liked her, right? You liked her right away. Joan Blondell. She was your girl,
Joan
right?
Joan Blondell, Gail Patrick, all sorts of people. Stanwyck.
Babs.
Oh, my God, I can't even think of who was, you know, everybody would come in and out of the house. A lot of behind-the-scenes people, too. A lot of the other makeup artists and hair people. And you know, I grew up knowing all these people.
How cool.
I adore. Joan was there. Joan Blondell was there. She was, like, part of the furniture.
I love her.
All the time.
She has
especially after Dot got sick. Yeah, Joan was great. Joan's claim to fame was me, because I didn't know who she was. I didn't know who any of them were. I didn't know who she was.
Of course
not.
You were just a kid.
I knew Judy had made a movie, Wizard of Oz, and that was it. She made a movie when she was a little kid. Okay, big deal. Joan's claim to fame with me was she had dogs, and I adored dogs. I was dog crazy. So when Joan would come over, many times she would bring the dogs with her, and I would just be gaga over her dogs, you know, because I couldn't have any pets.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal about Joan coming to visit. I didn't know who Dick Powell was. I didn't know who Berkeley was. I didn't know.
Of course.
I didn't know, the Gold Diggers of 1933. None of that. I didn't know any of that stuff.
No, because you're just a little kid.
Back then you didn't have access to the movies the way you do now with all the different
channels.
Mediums.
Right.
Media.
Media times 25.
Media,
yeah.
Yes. You know, if it wasn't on the Late, Late, Late Show, which I couldn't stay up to watch, you didn't see it. So, and I had no idea. So, you know, I just knew Joan was a friend of Dot's who had dogs, and Judy was a friend of Dot's who unfortunately didn't have dogs. But that was okay.
Okay, so tell us about Dot. She ended up getting multiple sclerosis. When did she discover she had that?
She had come back from the trip overseas with Judy in 51. I think it was the summer of 51 when they got back. They were there for quite a while, and she didn't feel well. She actually woke up one day, and she couldn't see. She woke up, and she was blind, basically. And she grabbed the phone. She was able to, I guess, dial the operator and call a cousin of hers right away. The cousin came over, and that was her first symptom. She could still use her arms and legs, but she couldn't see. Very gradually, within the space of, a couple of weeks, she couldn't walk.
Oh, my God.
And it was the MS. They didn't know what it was, you know. And they figured it out, and she lost the use of her arms and her legs.
So she must have had symptoms for a while, don't you think?
She said she thought she said she felt like she had the flu. She just felt draggy and whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, she had things to do, a little stiff. And gradually, her arms came back, her sight came back to a degree. It was never perfect. She wore glasses, you know, when she needed to read something, but even then she had difficulty. But she could see. Mm-hmm. Her sight came back. Her arms came back. Her legs never fully came back. When I first moved in with her, she could walk with the aid of a walker. She would hold on to the walker and move her legs. She was a little stiff, but she could still move around the house, go in and out of the house, you know, this kind of thing. Gradually, by the time I was 9, she totally lost the use of her legs and, unfortunately, her bodily functions.
Oh.
And she could still use her arms and she could see, but she couldn't walk and she needed, a bedpan and, you know, this kind of thing. I got to say, she took it with good grace. You know, she was very spiritual, not necessarily formally religious.
Right.
But she always figured that that was God's plan for her. That was his plan. And he had his reasons, and that was that. She wasn't going to go crazy over it.
Or
you know?
Be angry and bitter.
Just,
right.
Yeah, no, she always told people, make the best of what you got. If that's what you have, then work with it. You know, if you got lemons, make lemonade.
And so, Judy, who were her most consistent that stayed friends with her when she got very ill?
Well, Judy and Joan were there. Dietrich. Dietrich would send her all these specialists to see what they could do.
She was something
else. Dietrich was amazing. Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper liked Dot, and she always kept her in her column, even after she got sick.
Nice.
Joan's sister, Gloria Blondell, was there to try to help. Gail Patrick. Everybody, Paulette, you know, all sorts of people were. They knew what was going on. Stanwyck, Missy was a big supporter.
Did you know her? Did you meet Missy?
A little bit. You know, she was always working.
She never stopped. You know, she had an amazing career.
But she was on the phone. A lot of these people, Patsy Kelly, Johnny Engstead. Arthur Freed, Pasternak. I mean, they all knew. Dot was in touch with everybody.
So they would check on her and call her and...
Yeah, and find out what was going on, you know, that kind of thing. But I think most consistently it was probably Dietrich, Judy, and Joan. And Gail Patrick. Gail Patrick was there a lot. She would help out and do things.
Yeah,
and
she quit the movies pretty early, right?
Yeah, well, she married... Yeah, she had a couple of nice marriages.
I heard she was very bright.
She was very bright. She, you know, made a career for herself in business doing other things. And she was neat. She was a really nice lady. The one thing I couldn't stand about her was apparently when I was little and Dot couldn't go shopping for me, she had buyers in different stores. And my grandmother would take me to all the upscale stores. You know, Dot had me go to Bullock's and Magnum's.
Yeah.
And those were the days when you sat in the chair depending on who you were, and they would come to you. The people would, you know, parade the clothes in front of you, you know, just like you would see in like one of the old movies, Sister right. Parade or something, when they came out. So that's what I had, because that's what God arranged. And my grandmother would take me and, oh, this was good, and they would pick out my dresses. I couldn't wear pants. Damn it! I had.
Isn't that funny though that they loved the pants and you couldn't wear pants?
Well, I could later on. You know, when it was cold outside, Dot yeah. wanted me to wear pants, but she wanted me to look like a little princess, and I hated it because I was a tomboy. I was always ripping my clothes and climbing trees and getting dirty. But anyway, so poor Gail Patrick. Dot, for some reason, saddled her with the job of bringing me clothes sometimes. So Gail Patrick would come over, and she would have these large, you know, the large flat white boxes?
Yes.
That you know there were clothes in them. They weren't mm-hmm. books. They were toys. They weren't toys. They were clothes. And so I would hate it. And she would bring me these awful, scratchy, under, you know, the lacy underwear.
Yes.
And the petticoats the little girls wore back then. Oh, my God. I had to wear a petticoat under. Yeah, the little stuffy, the little ones that stood out. You know, they had to wear the petticoats under the dresses. Oh, God, I hated it.
It was like Fauntleroy for a girl, you know, that kind of outfit.
Right. And I still have a couple of them, actually. But Gail would come, and there would be these clothes. Go try it on and go, you know, parade in front of us. Go try it on. Show us how pretty it is. And I was I hated it. Scratchy, itchy. Oh my God!
Yes, and petticoats. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, you had to wear a petticoat.
You were just a little girl.
There was the frilly underwear,
right.
And the tights, and the Mary Janes, and the petticoats, and thank God she didn't put pantaloons. She actually did. She threatened to put pantaloons on me at one point.
Oh no!
I think my dad stopped that one.
Good.
I think my dad could have stopped it.
Like enough
Leave
is enough.
Leave the kid alone, for God's sake, you know. But Dot wanted me, well, she had beautiful outfits for me. I had the greatest Halloween costumes, though. I got to it. She got some of them from Minnelli because she knew Minnelli was getting costumes for his other daughter, Tina Nina.
Uh-huh.
And so I got a few. I remember my Dutch outfit actually came from Holland.
Wow. So did you wear your little clogs and have your hair
yes,
pigtails and home line?
I love that outfit. Yeah, oh, and I had a princess outfit. I looked like Glinda from The Wizard of Oz. I had a magic wand.
You didn't have to wear those stupid masks, the cheapo ones, let's face it.
No. Well, I had some of those as I was older because I wanted to be like the rest of my friends.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go to, you know, the drugstore and get a mask. You
right.
know, Dot's going, God, I have these outfits for you. You want to wear this crap? But, yeah. My favorite outfit was when I was about 10. And I cannot swear who this woman was. Now, I will tell you that Dot and Dad had both worked with, and I know Daddy did, I'm not 100% sure, they had worked at some time with Gypsy Rose Lee in what I forgot, but Daddy knew her. And
Gypsy?
A woman had come to the house, Gypsy, mm-hmm. and a woman had come to the house, and this must have been in, I don't know, 64, 65, and I was given, for lack of a kinder phrase, a prostitute outfit.
No way.
It was the bustier, you know, and the fishnet stockings.
Oh my God.
And the shoes and the whatever that you were, and I loved it. I loved this outfit. It was nasty. It was funny. It was, you know, I knew it was daring and different. But what I really remember is this woman, I put it on. I was told, you know, put it on, parade, you know, show us how you know, the fishnet stockings. I went nuts over.
I bet. You thought you were the coolest thing on earth.
But then this woman taught me how to undress. And I remember Dot
No.
We were in the kitchen, and Dot is cracking up, and she's, you know, not letting her go too far. But I had gloves on, long, lacy, kind of, they were open,
yeah.
you know, with the fingers
yes.
open, and they went all the way up to my, they were black. And I'm just, like, fascinated. And she's telling, and there was no music, but she's showing me, you take the glove off from the top a little at a time until you get to the fingers, and you let the glove hang there for a minute. And then she showed me how to roll down the stockings. And they were stockings. They
yeah.
were pantyhose. How to roll down. And Dot is, like, laughing her head off. And I'm and she tells me how to reach behind me and undo the back of the bustier to peel it down.
Oh,
you know,
no.
I mean, I had stuff underneath, and I didn't know what any of it. And I just remember Dot laughing and this lady telling me how to take my clothes off. I was fascinated. I didn't know what it was, but I was fascinated.
No balloons,
I'm not
huh?
Saying,
no balloons or doves.
No, with a pin, no. I'm not saying it was gypsy, but it may have been, because I really, there were so many people in and out of that house. Some of them I don't remember.
Yeah.
I do remember a couple of times Dot would say, don't you remember you met so-and-so? No, you know, so I don't know. We did have a visit once a couple years later. I was maybe 11. And Dot knew how much I loved it when people would come over to the house. I didn't care who they were, family, cousins that I didn't know, whatever.
You love guests.
I love meeting new people. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I love guests. People would come from Chicago that only came once or twice a year. You know, I loved it. I knew Dot was having a guest over the next day. It was a weekend. And Dot actually apologized to me. She was telling me she made arrangements. Daddy was going to take me somewhere. I was going to spend the day with Daddy. She knew how much I liked visitors, but this particular woman coming over had to talk to Dot about something. And she didn't really like children all that much. She didn't want, you know, she didn't want a kid around. She had to talk some business with Dot, blah, 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 blah. I don't know the last name of the woman. Okay, I knew how disappointed I was, but and Dot actually said, I'm sorry, you know, I know you like this, but this lady is special, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't like kids, doesn't appreciate having you around. I have to talk to her about some things. All I know is her first name was Kate.
Katherine Hepburn?
I don't know. I never was told. It fits the profile.
Sure does. You know, I don't think she is a kid person.
And when I think about it later, it was right around the time, or maybe right before the time, that she was going to do Coco.
Oh, on Broadway, do that whole thing.
Yeah. Now, Kate had asked for Dot's help before, during the African Queen. Dot made up a makeup chart for her. Other people did, too. I remember Patsy Kelly calling Dot when she was going to be in No, No, Nanette. She was calling Dot to ask her advice on something. So I don't know. All I know is the woman's name was Kate. I couldn't stick around because the lady didn't want a kid around, and how disappointed I was. And Dot had worked with Kate before, so had Daddy. In fact, Daddy worked on Jesse's Coming to Dinner. He did the makeup on that, he was one of the makeup artists on that. And I begged, but I was a little older by then. I begged, I pleaded, I groveled. I said, please let me go to that set with you, because I used to go to the set with Daddy all the time with different things. And he apologized. He said, I can't. It's a closed set. I said, drive me in the car and I'll just sit there and stare at I'll stare at the studio. I'll just stay in the car all day. I wanted to see Hepburn and Tracy so bad. Daddy said, I'm sorry, I can't do it, you know. So, too bad.
But. So, allegedly, we'll say the woman could have been Katherine Hepburn.
It could have been.
Because it does fit her profile. I don't think it was Kate Smith.
Yes. Oh, no. Who Dot also knew, by
she
the way.
Did.
Dot had worked with Kate Smith, yes, on some stage thing, you know, whatever, radio thing ages ago. But Dot knew Kate Smith. But no, this was not Kate Smith.
So look,
I'm pretty sure it wasn't Kate Smith.
I would say it probably wasn't, problem. But she doesn't exactly seem like she was, you know, would like kids too much either.
Well, I think I would have been okay with Kate Smith, but
yeah.
No, Hepburn, mm-hmm. Like I said, I never got a last name. It was all very hush-hush. And Dot was very much protecting whoever this woman was.
Yes.
You know, not from me, but in general, she was protecting her privacy. She was protecting the fact that she needed to get some advice, whatever it was, and that was that.
She wasn't
out of the house. And
just
by the time I came back later, whoever it was gone.
Kate Jones, the alias Kate Jones, had gone.
Right.
Okay. I think we should wrap this up with your telling us about Judy in London and how you, because Dot couldn't go, you were being prepared to go to Judy in London. Judy Garland.
Oh, at the end?
Yes.
Yeah. Judy, apparently, from what I remember, Judy had been around. I didn't always see her, but Judy, you know, Dot was in touch with her and mm-hmm. other people about her. And apparently the Christmas before, Judy must have been in town. And at some point, I remember Dot asking me, would you like to spend some of your summer vacation in London with Judy? Judy's living in London. Would you like to? And, you know, 6 months later, of course, so it was driving me crazy having to wait that long. The closer we got to June, the more Dot was trying to tell me that Judy wasn't necessarily the same person I remember from a couple years before. She wasn't feeling well, you know, blah, 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 blah. At the same time, she was trying. I remember that Dottie and Daddy both were going over the monetary system with me. Mm-hmm. They were trying to show me the difference between pounds and pence and guineas and sovereigns and whatever they had back then, you know, and show me the difference because I'd have to handle the money. And just Dot was making it clear to me that I was, if I were to go over, don't expect the same person.
Just be prepared. She wanted to prepare you.
Yeah. But Judy apparently wanted company, and her kids weren't going for whatever reason. You know, Liza
wasn't she
working.
Married? Judy
yes.
was married again.
Yes, she was. She was married. But anyway, the closer it got, the more lessons I got from Dot, I guess, as to I remember being told about the American consulate. You know, mm-hmm. Dot would tell you, if you have any problems at all, go to the consulate. You know, she taught me how to make a phone call. I mean, I knew how to make a phone call, but you had to make, it was different back then when you called.
International.
Europe.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you had to get the operator on the phone, person to person, or there were several different ways to make long distance phone calls. So I was being instructed in all these different things. And the closer it got to June, the more impatient I got. And I was ready to leave school, you know, anytime. I mean, the thought of going to spend the summer with Judy, it wasn't sinking into me. I really wasn't getting it, that there was a problem. Dot stopped short of telling me how severe it may have been, you know. And I'm sure she knew because she was in touch with other people.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, the thing was, the end of school was approaching. It was coming. I think it went by a few days. And I kept, when am I going on the plane? I wanted to go. And Dot kept hesitating. You know, I think deep down she didn't want me to go. But on the other hand, she wanted someone there,
yeah.
you know, to help Judy out. And, of course, it ended up being too late. And I'll always wonder if I could have made a difference, you know, if I had just yelled my head off more about, can I go now? You know, let me go now kind of thing. And it didn't happen. So, and I had just, it was my last year of eighth grade. So I just graduated junior high.
So you were 13 or 14, right?
Yeah, I was about 13 or turning 13 or something like that. Joey and I are the same age. And I was out. It was too late.
How sad.
Oh, I kind of never forgave Dot for that.
Well, you know, she was trying to protect you as well, because...
Yeah, I know, but I didn't want to be protected. I wanted to
No,
be
you're 13. I would have wanted to be there, too, and I would have...
I'm 13. I'm an adult.
Yeah, of course.
Sort of.
And I want to go, you know. So it's time.
And I can understand that she was trying to protect me, too, but... You know, she was trying to help Judy and protect me, and she just couldn't do both.
No.
It wasn't working.
It's a shame that no one else could have gotten there. But, you know, Judy's fate was probably Judy's fate. And nobody could have changed that, unfortunately. I don't think so. She gave so much.
Yeah.
And her little heart couldn't take any more. You know, her big heart couldn't take any more. And that is... So that must have devastated... your aunt and the community, but she was expecting it, though.
I don't know if she, I think to a degree she was, she knew something. She knew a lot more than she was letting on to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was in touch with people, various people who knew things, and obviously she wasn't going to tell me the extent of it, but I think... You know, you never really expect it, but when it happens, it's still a shock. But on the other hand, she knew something was very wrong.
Yeah. And that's so sad. And then Dot herself lived on with multiple sclerosis for how long?
She died in 1979.
Wow!
I believe.
So she lived.
Yeah.
She lived
another 10 years.
Wow!
10 years. Yeah.
And how long
did
you end up living with her?
I moved out when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get out and hit Hollywood hard.
Yeah, of course.
Didn't happen because Dot still had a lot of power, as it turned out, in 69, 70. Well, 74, actually, 74, 75. Dot still had a lot of power in the community. And I found out later, no matter how many auditions I went to, and how many callbacks I got, because I was going to various theater arts workshops, acting, singing, dancing, the whole bit. Dot had apparently, and I didn't find this out till years later, Dot had put the word out that I was not to be hired.
Why? She didn't want you in the business?
No, I had pre-registered for college.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated from high school early because I got everything. I was, you know, whatever. I got all my credits taken care of way ahead of time. So I graduated like a year early, something like that. And I was just banging around, not doing much of anything. And I had enrolled in college. That didn't start for 6-7 more months. And when I moved out, I said, okay, I'm going to, if I can't make it in show business in 6 months, I'll go to school. Because I was determined I was going to make it. And Dot wanted me, I mean, they both did. My dad did too, but Dot wanted me to go to school. She wanted me to stay in college or go to college. So she put the word out I was not to be hired, you know, and nothing happened, and I didn't get a job, and college was, you know, already partially paid for my first year, so I went to college.
Wow.
Duh.
I wanted
to be in show business.
I don't blame you. Wow. That must have been pretty hard to take when you found that one out.
Oh, it was. I found out from a cousin who used to work at Warner's to the head of, she was the head secretary to the, some department head, I can't remember what he did. I used to go visit her when I was taking classes at Warner's, and I would watch her. She was Dot. She was married to Dot's uncle, and a neat lady. You know, I really liked her, and I would go and visit and find out who was doing what in the studio and stuff like that there, and she knew what I was doing. She knew I was going to all these classes and things, and she was the one who told me years later, you know, I was visiting her, and I was talking about those days, you know, and I tried so hard and nothing ever happened, and I guess I wasn't very good. And she looked at me and she said, no, you were very good. People wanted to hire you, but Dot had put the word out that you were not to be hired.
The kibosh on it.
And she still had influence back then in different things. And that was it. You know, if she found out I had gone to an audition and she didn't know the people, she made phone calls.
Wow.
She wanted me to go to college. It was like, geez, leave me alone, lady.
I know. It's awful. That's...
Oh, she and Dad both. I had offers. You know, I would go visit the set of Here Come the Brides, for instance, with Joan Blondell. and Joan could have done something for me right then and there. And I remember I asked her once. I said, please, Joanie, just get me a little part, a little two lines, you know, so I can get my card, my SAG card. You know, I knew how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And Joan said, I can't. I told Dottie I wouldn't do it. She doesn't want you doing this. I don't want to do it.
So the kibosh was on. So you didn't get into that. That's a shame.
I had interviewed with Lee Strasberg,
the actor.
By myself, I'd gone down there. I'd gone down to where his classes were. He was holding his classes. I dolled myself up, as they say, a little bit. I was only 13 at the time.
Oh my goodness!
And I got my butt down there. I forgot how, but I think I conned someone to give me a ride. And I fessed up later. And then my dad took me down for a few lessons. So still before I, you know, totally enrolled.
Right.
And because usually he didn't accept kids that young. You know, you had to be an adult. You had to be 18, I think, at least.
Yeah.
But he liked what I was able to do. I did the exercises. He gave me some stuff to read. And I'll never forget, he called Dot because he knew about Dot. Now, I don't know how everyone knew about Dot, but he did. He knew my dad. He knew Dot. He called Dot, and he wanted me to be one of his students. He was willing to accept me even at the age of 13. And Dot said basically nothing doing. I mean, I was there for the conversation. I was begging and pleading, please, I want to do this. He likes me. He thinks I can do something. And I remember even him saying, Dottie, I think I can do something with her. And Dot saying, you can do nothing with her. You will do nothing with her. You know, and it was, I felt I wanted it so bad, and she just wouldn't let me in the business. So, oh, well.
Oh, well, that is for sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
But you wrote a wonderful book. And
yeah, she did.
And
she
you did, too.
To set the record straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, she... after Judy died, and I would come home from the drugstore with these various newspapers and magazines, and I would read to her things that were said about not only Judy, but mainly Judy,
yeah.
other people, and Dot would just hit the roof. She would get so angry at the lies and the innuendo and the garbage that was being spewed about Judy's life and career. Mm-hmm. And she decided she was going to write everything down because she wanted to set the record straight. She wanted people to know Judy as a human being and the wonderful, funny, giving, caring person that she was. You know, not this caricature to be manipulated.
Right.
You know. So
which was
that's
really
why
great.
She's, yeah.
And you put it together yeah. for her. And I think, you know, that's
yeah.
pretty amazing that you did. And it's a really, everybody, it's a really, really, really... good read, lots of great stories. We didn't have the time. It's 2 hours, so we have to finish it. But what I'm going to do is break it in two parts because, you know, one part is just talking about the studios, and after an hour, it's Judy. So I think that's a okay. good thing to do. We'll break it into the two parts. And I would totally recommend that you guys read About Face, The Life and Time of Dottie Ponadell, makeup artist to the stars. And it is really, really a great book. And she was something else. And you were something else. And thank you for getting up so early and being so articulate and filling me in on, and filling all of us in on all this great information. I can't thank you enough, Meredith. This is Meredith Ponadell.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. And I love getting the word out there about Dot. You know, for many, many, many years, she was the only woman makeup artist.
Which is amazing.
Yes, because the men fought against her and labeled her and branded her and tried to get her blackballed from the union. And she fought against it. And so did her many wonderful star friends. And she persevered and kept going.
Yeah, she was a pretty amazing woman, I have to say that. She really was. Okie dokie. So thanks again, Meredith. This is Meredith Ponadell. And again, Danny, you did some good stuff there. I'm glad it wasn't fiction. And it is a really good book. You'll learn a lot of stories about the people she worked with. And it's a really, really good book. So I'm going to link it up for everybody when I post this. And Meredith, anything else you want to promote, or are you good?
I'm good. I'm great. Thank you for this. It was a wonderful opportunity, and I totally appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on, because I was thrilled. I mean, I love the book, and it was just engrossing, and I got into it, and I'm thrilled you came on, and you were so good about it, getting up as an early bird with the roosters.
Right.
Okay, everybody.
Now I get to get going and go to work.
Yes, and I have to get going. So thank you so much. And to the listeners, we'll be back again. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Meredith. And talk to you soon, everybody. Bye.
The night is bitter, the stars have lost their glitter, the winds grow colder, suddenly you're older, and all because of the man that got away. Done you that great beginning has seen a final inning. Don't know what happened. It's all a crazy game. Every trick of his, you're on to. But fools will be fools, and where's he gone to? The road gets rougher, it's lonelier and tougher. With hope you burn up, tomorrow he will turn up. There's just no let up the livelong night and day. Ever since this world began, there is nothing sadder than a one-man woman looking for the man that got away.